She's to sick bay. The doctor should look at it as soon as possible.
It is the way in which we propagate our species. Please demonstrate how this is accomplished.
So, what's next?
I don't know.
Hi. And welcome to Casual Trek, a Star Trek recap and ranking podcast brought to you by Nerd and Ty and Naja's Menagerie. Hey, we've got humans now! I am in the human exhibit myself, proving most of my family wrong. I'm Charlie Etheridge Nunn, a writer and a Pokemon fan.
And I'm Miles Reed Lobato, here to exhibit the long-haired Southern Brit. While I am not really a Pokemon fan, I am married to a Pokemon fan. That said, my favorite Pokemon is Wobbuffet.
Nice. I've been partial to Fuecoco since Scarlet and Violet.
He is an adorable little chap.
He is. I'm not normally a fire starter guy, but yeah. Like that one definitely had to go for. Normally it's been Squirtle all the way for me. What other Pokemon looks so cool in sunglasses?
That is true. You're asking the wrong member of the editing team which other Pokemon look good in sunglasses.
As the podcast's resident Pokemon expert in a Star Trek podcast, I don't often get the chance to come out from behind the editing curtain, but I have risen to the cause of naming the 6 best Pokemon to wear sunglasses by category. For the funny category, Wobbuffet. Wobbuffet is hilarious, whatever it's doing. I just want to see it crossing its weird blue flippers, wearing a pair of shades. For the cool category, Gengar. Goes without saying, Gengar is cool and cooler in shades. For the practical category, Groudon. It summons harsh sunlight immediately when being sent out, so better give this Earth-huge Pokemon some shades. For the scary category, Stuffle and Beware together are scary enough as it is, and now we add the coolness of shade. And for the strategic category, Dark-type Tyranitar has access to Knockoff and Pursuit. Equipping the black glasses adds extra damage to its stab damage on dark moves, removing an opponent's item and then punishing it hard if it switches out afterward. Finally, for the honorable mention, Missing No. He glitches, so you have infinite sunglasses.
Wow. So, we are not talking about Pokemon. Not today, at least. That will inevitably happen at some point in the future. But instead, we talk about 3 different Star Trek shows who we rank from on our big list of best to worst. And this episode, we're having a look at some adorable and questionable creatures in the various Star Trek animated series, partly to celebrate the return of Lower Decks for its 5th and final season. And partly because it had been a while. And it's always fun to talk about weird creatures. So before we do that though, Miles, what non-Star Trek thing have you been enjoying since we last spoke?
I have been enjoying a computer game. I have been playing, on the recommendation of Andy from Breakfast in the Ruins, the game Still Wakes the Deep, which is a first-person survival horror game done by a group I found out is actually based in Brighton. So, nice. Homeboys represent, and it takes place in the 70s on a Scottish oil rig, and you play Kaz, a lecky, an electrician, a lecky if you're Scottish, who is about to get turfed off this oil rig, but then the drill basically finds it uncovers the thing.
Oh, you don't want to do that.
No. So you basically have the thing on an oil rig in the 70s. I'm surprised that James Herbert hadn't written like 10 novels on this plot alone.
Yeah, it's got to have come close, definitely.
Yeah, but no, it's been really good. It's a pretty short game. It has probably some of the best voice acting I've heard in a game in some while. Like, all the different members of the oil rig are really putting in, like, their A game. And the fun part is they're all Scottish. And so you get a lot of wonderful urban Scottish slang, although the subtitles translate 90% of it to, like, a close, easily digestible Western equivalent. And I just feel that's taking away the fun.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, dear. Excellent. Yeah, I've seen some Let's Play footage of it, and it looked like an entertaining, slightly tense time.
Yeah. It's not as grillingly unfair as Alien Isolation.
Mm.
A game I probably only ever play for like a week once a year. And every week I make about 5 minutes more progress until I eventually get killed by the alien, because the AI for the alien is too damn good, and that game has nearly given me a heart attack more times than I've cared to admit.
I mean, it's a perfect organism.
Yeah.
You know, what else is it going to do?
But Charlie, what about you? What non-Star Trek thing have you been enjoying this week?
So I've been enjoying a place. I've been to Kew Gardens with my partner for her birthday. We stayed near there because it's too big. Like, it's so big that you kind of need extra time to go around it. So we had a bit of a wander around. By a bit, I mean pretty much 12 hours with a brief pub break as well, as they had a Halloween trail on during the evening. Okay. So we saw all of the varied sights. We saw a lovely pagoda. We saw Princess Charlotte's cottage, which is only a cottage if you're a royal person that has never seen a real cottage. Like, it's an ancient building, but even it is mock Tudor, you know?
Okay, so when you said ancient, when you said like royal cottage, how many floors does it have?
I think two, but with quite high ceilings.
Okay.
Yeah. The pagoda was massive and sadly closed, but it made for a good point of reference of roughly where in the park you were with where you'd see it. There were a lot of trees, a lot of squirrels. There was a nice treetop walkway, which is one of those experiences where when you go around it, the Jurassic Park theme just plays in your head. And then we saw bits being set up for Halloween. Like, as we were leaving for the pub, we saw skeletons being draped around a bunch of fake graves, and saw stands where lights were being fitted, and coming back in, it's lovely how much it could be transformed. And there were some people that were obviously on a bit of a loop doing things like a witch looking for a cat and doing all sorts of weird experimenty things, fire dancery people, and like some weird faced monster thing that would just lunge at people occasionally. And
are you sure you hadn't caught your face in a mirror?
Not this time.
Okay.
No. Last time.
Okay. Has the court case finished on that one?
No, it's still outstanding. So okay. I can only say so much about it.
Fair enough. All right.
Without a lawyer present. But yeah, there were a lot of skeletons, a lot of interesting kind of like spider webbed up areas and light show bits. There were these trees draped in long green lines of light, which looked like they were oozing like some kind of horrendous green stuff, with skeletons that had bits of the light going through them, like poor unlucky adventurers that had gone too far. Yeah, it was good fun.
Sounds awesome, honestly.
Yeah. Emma and I have been to a few like Christmassy trails or winter trails, which are all quite nice and lit up around Stanmer Park and Wakehurst, but we're both a bit more Halloween people than Christmas people for that. So getting to see all of the spookiness and, you know, some of the kids that were freaked out by some bits, others that were yelling at the ring ghost looking person that was there. It was a good time.
And do you know what was also a good time?
Was it one to three of these episodes.
Yes, yes, it was entirely.
Yeah. So we're going to have the main event that I think people will inevitably know by our show title, which we've not decided on, but you know which episode we're referring. Yeah. That's going to be saved to last. So first up, we have an episode of Star Trek The Animated Series. This one's from Season 1, Episode 15, titled The Eye of the Beholder. And it aired on the 5th of January, 1974, written by David P. Harmon and directed by Hal Sutherland. The UK's number one hit was Merry Xmas, Everybody. I started watching the music video for it and going, I didn't realize it was a music video. Oh, this is all right. Like, as far as cheesy, bad, overplayed Christmas songs go, this is all right. And then it just didn't stop.
No. Like, if anyone who's worked in customer service or hospitality during the Christmas season, there are some songs which you have a Pavlovian reaction to. There is the one that we shall not mention, for to mention its name shall awaken her early. Then there is the Bob Geldof Live Aid song, which I think might just be the most patronizingly British song ever. It's like, hey, starving African child, do you know it's Christmas?
Oh, damn.
And then there is there's Paul McCartney's Christmas song. And I normally don't give Paul McCartney any kind of real slack. Apart from this one song.
Yeah.
This song, it's just like, okay, great, Paul. You were already Beatles rich. Did you need to be like tacky Christmas pop song rich?
Apparently so.
And then there's this one, which, yeah, like you said, just doesn't end. But I can imagine like the hundreds of drunk punters on the dance floor.
Definitely. Yeah. This is drunk Christmas party kind of music. And the US had Jim Croce with Time in a Bottle, that song from one of the slow motion bits in X-Men and from the end credits of the most recent Agatha All Along episode.
Oh,
as well,
okay.
Was weird.
I have not watched Agatha All Along. I have watched Days of Future Past on a flight either to or from the US. I can't remember. And it's the scene, I think, like, the scene itself and the slow motion one from Apocalypse are like the two best bits of those films.
Yeah, it evidently hit on that thing of that one time was really good, so we have to do it again.
Yeah. Did they do it in Dark Phoenix?
God, I can't remember. I saw it at the cinema and I've repressed so much of it. You know, there was the weird kind of cargo crate Genosha. There was Celine, but not Celine! But, like, yeah, someone completely different by the same name.
Sounds like most of the characters in the X-Men films that aren't
Wolverine. Yeah, there was the terrible makeup job on Mystique, which just highlighted the fact that she was inevitably going to die. And the fact that they got the same fucking writer that did X-Men 3 The Last Stand to do Dark Phoenix and have a stab at it again. He was bad at it the first time. Anyway, need to not rant about that. I need to hear about what exactly is in the Eye of the Beholder. Go into the menage.
The Enterprise is orbiting the planet Lactose Intolerance 7. There is a missing science crew. A land party beams aboard, takes the ship's log, and discovers that the leader of the expedition, Lieutenant Commander Martel, sent after three of his team didn't come back. The other three decided to go down, find out what's going on, and bring him back. This is a plan, of course, with no drawback, so the entire crew is missing. Kirk, Spock, and McCoy beam down into a Roger Dean album cover. Have you ever seen, like Yes or any kind of trippy poster in a head shop or your dad or like the bedsit of your 18-year-old friend who is way too much in The Grateful Dead, then you've seen that kind of poster. And they immediately get attacked by flying creatures. Dragon-like. Okay, the dragon-like creature doesn't attack them. It just kind of sways from side to side. And Kirk, Spock, and McCoy chase them off with their phasers. Although McCoy does briefly get crushed by the dragon one. Oh, McCoy, will we ever tire of you and your antics? F your Spock. Yes! Kirk, Spock, and McCoy just kind of wander around the planet, going from ecosystem to ecosystem, until they get captured by giant hot pink Christmas logs with prehensile elephant-like proboscis. Kind of like the sand trout in Dune. They get captured and tentacled. Must be Tuesday. The big creatures take them back to their city, traveling at incredible speeds, and they realize, oh, we're actually in some kind of a zoo, and we're the new exhibit. Kirk, Spock, and McCoy get chucked in a encampment for humans, and they find Lieutenant Commander Merkel and some of the other members of the party. They've been trapped here the entire time. What happened to the other members of the party? Who knows? They probably got eaten, but we're not going to talk about it. Spock surmises that these creatures actually might be telepathic because he can kind of pick up a faint telepathic buzz. So using the power of the mind, Spock is able to persuade one of the creatures to bring them the medical kit so McCoy can check out the injured members of the landing party, and then eventually a communicator. Plan to use the communicator to beam back onto the ship.
Oh no! Right, no food in your exhibit.
Okay, fine. That's okay. I'll just eat your leg, like in that one Flight of the Conchords song.
Oh no. Okay, well, start and we'll see how far you get. Through the recap, not my leg.
Okay. One of the smaller creatures takes the communicator and accidentally beams back up on board the Enterprise. Much to the shock of Scotty, who was definitely not expecting to have to write a report on this today, the two adult creatures start attacking Kirk telepathically because they're the parents and they're worried about their child. The small on the Enterprise, Scotty's just being carted around, you know, like some kid's new toy, onto the bridge. How the hell does creature fit in the turbo lift? No clue. I'm guessing they have no bone structure and can just, you know, they're like Dougal from the Magic Roundabout. They can just kind of squash and, you know, stretch and squash to fit in any kind of volume.
Yeah, it looks like Play-Doh or something.
This is what happened to Moore from the old stop motion cartoons. Wow, Magic Roundabout and Morph. We are throwing in like the deep cut British pop culture references this week. Scotty is able to actually make friends with the creature and beams him, and they beam back down, and the baby creature is reunited with its parents. It turns out that this planet and this species are centuries more advanced than the Federation, and was able to access all of the computer systems on the Enterprise, thus knowing about the Federation, about Starfleet, about doing a Starfleet, I assume. And the humans are let go. While these creatures are far more advanced than Starfleet and see them as primitive, they can see the capacity for growth and maybe come back in about 40 or 60 centuries. Although, as Kirk points out, they never did bother to work out what the time difference is for a century on this, the Eye of the Beholder.
Wow. Okay, and that is 2 minutes and 5 seconds over. Yeah, so those creatures, like, what the hell? I saw the episode art for this and was like, okay, this is probably going to be a good one, but they look so kind of weird and unfortunate, especially face on. Those kind of, I don't know, the trunks. I thought they were mounts or like pets of something. And I love the fact that they were the ones running the exhibit.
Yeah, that is, I think, the really good thing about the animated series is that they realize, oh, wait, we can actually do non-humanoid creatures. And yeah, okay, fine. They're not going to look great. This is Filmation, and we will cut every single corner we can. But we will give you some weird aliens.
Yeah, I mean, there were some problems with that, really. Like, the moment they started having to deal with a completely invisible force field, I was like, guys, you can make a force field. Like, they only had to mime and pretend in live action. You can actually do this.
Yeah, but that's going to, like, cost, like, another cell of animation cell to, like, scratch in, like, a light blue to just kind of put over the frame, and that costs money.
I guess so. Yeah, this was definitely one of those episodes of the animated series where you can really see the corners, like, cut to a nice smooth surface. It was impressive. Not only the amount of silhouettes of them walking in the distance, but even up close when Kirk goes like, it's right, I'll pretend I'm distressed. And if we all think really hard about the communicator, they'll pass me the communicator. Cut to, he's already on the floor. There's been no motion, and he's a silhouette as well. So we don't need to draw him on the floor even. That was some very good, like, low effort design.
I think that's one of those things. One of the things I remember, I think this was on either Sky One or BBC Two really early in the mornings when I was a kid. Mm. So this is like one of those shows where I always feel very kind of alone and isolated. There is a weird sense of loneliness in the animated series, which might just be from being a 10-year-old watching this in the living room at 6 a.m. on the TV while your parents are still asleep. You had to be as quiet as possible.
Mm.
But you have a lot of just kind of walking around these very vast and beautifully desolate landscapes, being occasionally menaced by a creature that is flying at you. We assume. We never see how far in distance they're in relation to you. We just see them.
Yeah.
We're just going to shoot them.
Just imagine they're really imposing, and don't pay too much attention to the fact that the dragons are kind of like the swoopers from the Infinite Vulcan, just without the corkscrew. I assume they've been removed for safety or something.
Probably. I mean, wouldn't you? I mean, look,
yeah.
I don't think these creatures have like a very intense wine fermenting community, unless they do. Maybe they have like a wonderful cheese and wine community.
Well, maybe they de-corkscrewed them for that.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, the weird proboscis, like, trunk hand thing that they have doesn't look like the best fine manipulator, so...
No, that's, you know...
Who built all their stuff? Like... What's a construction worker of that species like?
You know what it is? You know, I think I know what it is. It's our old friend from Space 1999. They implemented a eugenics program.
Well, and they evolved into this, a kind of weird, like, pachyderm snail hybrid thing.
They evolved into, like, the Guild Navigator from the 84 Dune movie.
Mm.
But, you know, F you did it for kids.
Yeah. Yeah, some kind of, I don't know, like, alien fetus thing that's just got this one long grabby arm. It's horrific, but in a kind of endearingly bad way. You know, the eyes have this kind of slightly hangdog look, which, again, didn't help with the, oh yeah, these guys are definitely thousands of years more evolved than us.
They're either really advanced or really stoned. We don't know which.
Maybe both.
Yeah.
You know, let's get high, go to the museum, go to the zoo and see all of these creatures. Look at that one. It's wearing fabric. What the fuck?
Look at that one. It's alternating between yellow fabric and blue fabric, depending on the shot.
Yeah, that was distracting with Markel.
I do love watching. Oh man, Markel looked like he was on like his fifth day from retirement.
Yeah, either he didn't need this, or frankly, I guess this will do for a holiday now.
Like he's quitting. Like he goes home, he's like, I'm done. I was in a zoo for it. Like I have put all I can towards Starfleet and the service, but I just spent like 6 months in a zoo for humans. And you know what that makes you think? I want to work in a shop, and not just any kind of shop. I want to work in a shoe shop. Do we have replicators? I don't know. I'm just going to work in a shoe shop to keep alive the grand old tradition of shoe shops. I want to work. I want to work in a Timpsons somewhere on the high street.
Oh dear. Yeah. My word. Yeah, they did have a third person who didn't really do much because they're unconscious for it.
Oh, but, I don't know, the other woman who sounded exactly like Majelle Barrett.
Because she was.
Was just kind of standing there. She's just like, I'm here too.
Good. Oh yeah, but there was a third person as well who was also just unconscious of the whole thing. I did like that it was a bit of a Bones effort this week. You know, he had some good times. Trying to focus, you know, everyone gave their good thinking looks, which for a cartoon where you can do anything, it's great to animate everyone just thinking with their eyes closed and being really still.
I mean, also Scotty. I mean, Scotty got
I loved that. It's like, okay, is this because it's a kid one that was beamed up there, but its thoughts aren't too confusingly fast and weird, or is it because for some reason they've got some innate connection to the Scottish, but they're like, oh we've figured you out, okay, now we know what humans are like, now we shouldn't put you in a zoo.
Oh no, you don't put the Scottish in a zoo.
No they don't care for it. Oh dear, yeah. So, it was very funny seeing him being just lifted and dragged around.
I think Scotty was just having one of those days where he's just questioning his life.
Yeah, yeah. Later on, it would 100% be a Miles O'Brien plot.
Oh yeah,
you know, I'm just being lifted and dragged about.
I am sure Miles O'Brien has been manhandled by some alien slug creature that Quark smuggled onto the station for reasons. I'm sure Odo has actually gotten really drunk off scotch, shapeshifted into this exact creature. That's how he got his revenge for punching him in the jaw. He waited until he got his shapeshifting powers, and then just like turned into a giant slug and just kind of dragged O'Brien around the promenade.
Yeah, it was an entertaining episode. It's personally, for me, it was no Infinite Vulcan.
No.
Which is another one that has a kind of menagerie of freaky creatures. But yeah, it was still all right. And I guess we should figure out where on our big list of 133 Star Trek shows and films this should go. And that list, what's it contain? Well, I'm glad you asked, also me. It has in first place Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, because, of course. In 50th place, we have the pilot for Discovery, the Vulcan Hello / Battle at Binary Stars. Down at 100, we have Space Seed, where we meet Khan for the first time, and there is some very unfortunate blackface. And then down at 133, we have some non-consensual prating about in Plato's Stepchildren. So with Eye of the Beholder, my first thought is, yeah, this is no Infinite Vulcan. No. We do not get a giant Spock. Like, Spock gets to do a few things, one of which seemed to be kind of just surrender to it a bit. Like, oh no, this is our life now. Fine, I guess, you know, be devil's advocate, but maybe give it a bit of a go rather than going, they're obviously far too evolved for us. But I will say, I did like the cheap budgeted eyebrow raise. As a person that's got the nice opposable eyebrows myself, I always appreciate that. So yeah, so the Infinite Vulcan's currently at spot 45 on our list. I think mostly because the Legion of Superheroes level daftness of it.
I'm sure there's a good few like old Silver Age Legion of Superheroes stories when, like, I don't know, Karate Kid gets locked in a space zoo.
There were a few, yeah.
Let's have a look. I'm
saying my ceiling is Infinite Vulcan for this.
Yeah, this is not Infinite Vulcan.
Hmm.
Man, this is like some of these are easier than others, and then there's just like, yeah, it's a space zoo. what you gonna do?
Yeah, we got a few of them. Yeah, let's see. Actually, looking at other animated things, a bit further down in 81, we've got Second Contact from Lower Decks, which has some nice fun on a giant space spider. So, you know, not a million miles away.
No.
But, yeah, I think I prefer that to this.
See, I don't know. I think I would prefer this to that.
Oh.
Because I feel the first episode of Lower Decks is when the rancid funk of Rick and Morty is just most prominently on the show.
That's fair.
So I'm actually looking at the number 79, The Man Trap, where Bones' ex is after everyone's salt. You know, you got a weird creature on a desolate planet. Whereas that one just wants to kill you and drink your salt. These ones just want to stick you in a zoo.
Yeah, I mean, zoo's preferable to getting all your salt taken out. I think, yeah, like, The Man Trap was all right. Yeah, I don't know. This one had some fun moments, but it's ultimately fairly short. Like, the freaky monsters, no offense to the makeup for the salt vampire, which is fine. I know it's iconic, but it's not great. I kind of prefer the weird, horrifying, slightly sad-looking slug pachyderm things with the kind of wispy, too long fingers just grabbing at things. It's unpleasant in a brilliant way that only a cartoon could do.
And then above 79, we have, surprisingly, number 78, which is a two-parter, which is DS9's The Marquee, which is episodes 20 and 21 of season 2. And I would say this is probably better than The Marquee. The Marquee is more important to... are The Marquee really that important to Star Trek DS9? Like, they're not prominent.
They're more important to Voyager, but yeah, I get it. Like, this is their first appearance. It's not great.
Yeah, it's a strong start, but it is the weak finish that pulls down what could have been a really good episode. And this one's fun.
Yeah. Okay. So we've got the first of the Jadzia Dax has a murderer in her brain episodes above that, which is, it's all right. Like, I found the other one a bit more fun as far as the hamming up of the bad Dax.
You like the full ham of Duran Dax?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, give me a hammy villain.
All right.
You know, but yeah, that one, it was good fun. It was less funny, but it was at the point where you get some good DS9.
Yeah.
So yeah, possibly between those two then, above the Marquee.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. After that, we got 76, which is another DS9, which is Captive Pursuit, where O'Brien befriends a lizard.
Aww. Yeah, and he doesn't have to get carried around embarrassingly by the lizard.
Yep. But there, so, I would say that Captive Pursuit was better than this, but this...
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that this is probably better, and I would say this fits in pretty nicely between 77 and 78 Equilibrium and the Marquee, respectively.
Nice. So that is the new number 78. And one day we will mention the episode Equilibrium without me thinking about the film with the gun catter.
Oh, God.
Not today, though.
Not today.
Next up, we have our first episode of Star Trek Prodigy Season 2 that we've covered, which is exciting and a little confusing for me because I've not seen most of Season 1 or any of Season 2, but we'll get to that. This one is Season 2, Episode 13, titled A Tribble Called Quest. It aired on the 1st of July 2024. It was written by Keith Sweet II and directed by Sean Bishop. The UK number one hit was Sabrina Carpenter with Espresso, and the US had Post Malone's Country Phase featuring Morgan Wallen with I Had Some Help.
Okay, even though I listened to both songs about an hour before recording, I cannot remember I Had Some Help at all.
I vaguely remember it sounding like any bro country thing. It felt weird as a Post Malone joint, but also like a sound tactical move, I guess, career-wise, to go... Okay, he's done his own thing. He's worked with Taylor Swift. There's a lot of country out there at the moment, or at least there appears to be. So, of course, let's pivot to some of that. Yeah. And Sabrina Carpenter, I'd not heard any of before. And while I do like a bit of pop, you know, I'm a big Carly Rae Jepsen fan, but I don't know, like, some of the tune of this was all right. It just didn't land for me, despite being kind of the main thing here being comparing herself to Coffee, and I do love Coffee.
The tune of the song, I swear I've heard it on one of those kind of ambience playlists that I've like you put up on like either YouTube or Spotify.
Oh, what, lo-fi beat kind of thing?
Pretty much, you know, the ones which always have like some a screen which is very sort of 80s and neon. In the way that the 80s really weren't. Maybe it's just like an American thing. Maybe neon was just more of an American thing, whereas here was this kind of like Thatcherism and gunmetal grey.
Maybe. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, someone just seeing online, someone mentioning about just some untouched splice loops. And And stuff like, mentioning synth from the early 90s as well. So, yeah, maybe it is just for style. We did a triple episode a while ago, and then they went and sprung another one on us. And, this time I'm going to explode into a bunch of small furry creatures. And scare some Klingons.
And as always with Charlie, the triple horror continues.
Yes.
You have 3 minutes to recap this episode and go.
Okay, so previously, I don't know, but Will Wheaton and Robert Picardo in the credits now? And there's some Vulcan called Majel. No relation to Mon-El, but I see what they did there. Also, Zero has a body and Murph has limbs. Weird. So, at some point, I should watch these Star Trek shows. Anyway, the Protostar is stranded and needs to get some bosonite to power its engines again. Luckily, they've found a place. Unluckily, Chakotay's here as well. I mean, unluckily, the planet's a wreck. Chakotay says nature's out of balance here because he's deep and that. And sure enough, a triple rolls out to prove that he's right. Rock Talk immediately falls in love with them as the triple replicates. and again and again. Rock Top gleefully explains how invasive tribbles are, and then one bites her. That's not happened before. And there's a giant one. It rolls after them like Boulder from Raids of the Lost Ark style. The giant tribble crushes Zero and almost knocks Dal off a cliff until Murph saves him with one of its like weird stretchy limbs. Zero's leg is broken and they want off the planet, so Jank and Pog agrees to take them back to the ship to get sorted out. The others bump into a Klingon called Karuvong, who starts yelling at them. Luckily, they do have translators to help with this a bit. And Chakotay gets a bit racist about Klingon scientists. And Gwyn explains, oh yeah, he's stuck here until he figures out how to deal with the Tribbles, the nemesis of the Klingon Empire.
Kapla.
Kapla! Karuvong's digs are a bit of a mess, and Rock Talk's like, yay, I'm a specialist in all adorable weird things, and tries to help to see what could be done about the Tribbles. She actually has an idea about stuff that will make them smaller and less prolific in their breeding, which would be really helpful. Majel don't give a fuck about Tribbles. She just wants them to stay on mission with all the energy of someone that has been with this crew and realizes how very easily they're distracted. Luckily, the Bosonite is in a massive Tribble nest. That's good. Chakotay gets a bit doubtful about Rock Talk and just fuck off, mate. Honestly, what are you doing here? Zero's leg can't be healed, and their body's not really going to get better. Jenkum suggests use some technology to help with that, showing off his cybernetic arm. Gwyn and Majel sit on top of a Klingon ship and talk about how they feel displaced. And I'm displaced in time.
Nope. You had to spend 10 minutes in the Tribble pit.
Oh, no. Oh, God, I'll be getting Tribble hair out of everything for months.
Oh, no, it's like those piranha bars when they nibble the dead skin off your body.
Oh.
Just with Tribbles.
Nibbled to death by Tribbles.
Yup.
That's a horrible thought.
Or better than being smothered to death by Tribbles.
I guess.
All right. Okay, stopwatch is going to go and continue.
Yeah, so Majel was apparently added to this cast by Wesley, I'm guessing Crusher, and Gwyn wants to go back to her people to help them out a bit. Back inside the ship, something's loose. Oh no, it's running around out of view. Slapstick ensues until morale improves and we find what's there underneath a bowl. It's not a Tribble. It's a Tribble with a face? Abomination! Abomination! What horrors has Rock Talk unleashed? Sure enough, this makes her doubt her abilities, which is sad because she is precious, but this is a monster. Anyway, even with that, her infected grain gets left out for the Tribbles, and there is not enough to go around. Dal and Gwyn put up some pylons down in the Tribble nest to beam out the Bosonite. And the Tribbles are distracted now. They're fed on the grain and they all rush down, raining down, smashing a pylon, meaning while they beamed out the Bosonite, Gwyn and Dal can't get out. It's looking pretty bad for our team until that abomination starts making noises and chattering away. The Tribbles hear this and leave. Then the grain actually starts to have an effect. Karuvong's thrilled because he can leave this shithole. Speaking of which, for Bosonite, after a bit of a false start, actually works. Powering up the engines, almost blinding Chakotay in the process, Rock Talk's got a horrifying new friend in this Bribble, and it's time to go home. Hooray!
Hooray! 1 minute, 47 seconds. And that'll be 5 minutes in the Tribble pit instead.
Okay. 5 I might be able to tolerate. I hope I've not developed any allergies or anything. So, have you seen any of season 2 of this?
No, I've seen about 14 episodes of season 1. And so the fact that Zero has a body now, the fact that Murph has limbs now.
It's weird.
Yeah, completely skipped me by.
I'm looking forward to finding out how Murph got limbs, because that's going to be weird and freakish.
I feel this is what happens if you pick up like an issue of X-Men and you've not read an X-Men comic in like 4 years. Could be like, who is this Longshot character? Who's Dazzler? Where's Cyclops? Why are they in Australia?
Who's Eye Boy? I get that. Admittedly, I am entirely one of those people that loves that moment of, I'm figuring this shit out. What is any of this? I don't know. I always find it quite intriguing. With this, I'm interested to see what they do with Zero, both in giving them a body and what's going to happen with their body kind of falling apart. Is it going to properly fall apart, or is it going to be a kind of we're exploring disability sort of thing? So yeah, I'm intrigued by that. And yeah, with Madge L, where the moment I saw for now, I was like, I see what you did. I get it. It's not going to be like Peter David's weird kind of like universal Majel Barrett thing that he was doing, right? Because, yeah, that was odd. And, yeah, there was a lot more triple horror with the giant ones, which hopefully weren't also pregnant with other giant tribbles, or just explode out like a horde of them.
These tribbles, I don't know if it's because of the animation, but like these tribbles seem almost rabid. Like the fur seems a lot more matted in the animation than like they do in the TV show, where it's like, this is a cute ball of fuzz.
Whereas they're kind of clumped.
It needs a trim. They all need a trim.
Yeah, shampooing them maybe. I don't know, that might encourage them.
How can you differentiate a rabid tribble from an actual tribble?
Well, one of them bit Rock Talk. Obviously a rabid one.
That small baby was an abomination.
It was. I looked at it and it was that kind of, you have been packaged and designed to be kind of, hey, look at this adorable pet for like kid friendly kind of things. And it's like, even as a kid, I'd been like, kill it. Just fucking kill it. I don't care for this thing. I am immediately dubious of it and its motives. It's going to be trouble.
Yeah, on the whole, it was a fun story. It's just like, there is some character stuff going on, but we're watching, like, obviously mid-arc.
Yeah.
I am surprised that Chakotay is still wearing the shitty half-ragged clothing that they obviously found him in.
Yeah, if it was a cartoon, the old animated series, I'd go, well, of course they've done that because they didn't want to pay money to draw an extra uniform.
Yeah.
But who knows with this. I didn't feel lost so much as there were some elements where I felt a little too similar to First Contact, with the way in which they entered a world and everything all went a bit awry, and, you know, and they did manage to fix it in the end. It's like, yeah, it's kind of, I don't know, a little samey. Obviously, it's nice having new cast members to kind of bounce other characters off of, because that way you get things like Gwyn and Majel's interaction, which, like, it didn't feel like Gwyn and Dal would have that kind of conversation.
So, on the subject of Dal, I swear every time we watch a new episode of Prodigy, we end up going back to the same question. How obnoxious do you find Dal right now? And I feel like since we're, midway through season 2? And this is the furthest that we've seen him. How obnoxious is Dal right now?
I mean, he didn't do a massive amount in this. He was at an acceptable level of Dal. With the whole kind of this abomination tribble is a kind of weird genetic engineered freak, and he was like, oh, like me. So yeah, when I was listing out synopses to try and see what episode to do, I saw there's one which explains what Dal is. So I'm guessing he's some kind of weird chimera of things. But yeah, aside from that and the pylons and needing rescuing, you know, this was more Rock Talk's thing, which was good.
Did you get to the point in the show where Rock Talk becomes like the science one?
Nope. I have seen exactly as many episodes as we've covered.
Okay.
Well, no, I saw episode three of the two-part.
Gotcha. Because for context, yeah, they get stuck in like separate time zones, and Rock Talk is stuck on her own for a undisclosed amount of time, but it's implied to have been quite a while, because she goes in one end as she sort of is at the beginning of the show and comes out the other end like a scientific savant. Like, nice. She basically spent that entire time just having to crunch all the science.
See, I like when you can muck about with stuff like that. There was a pair of X-Men annuals by Brian Bendis and Andrea Sorrentino about Tempest getting stuck out of time and going back and forth and all of the wonders and horrors of what that means, especially if you make a life for yourself for several years and then in a whim it accidentally gets completely undone, which is horrifying, but also, yeah, made her a lot more done with Scott Summers and Professor X's bullshit. So yeah, which was good.
And speaking of bullshit, we have a big list.
We do, yeah. We've got to the point where I'm blathering about X-Men, so it's probably a good point to check that list out.
God.
Yeah, so...
This was fine.
It was fine, yeah. So I'm looking at First Contact in 88 currently, which, yeah, that's... Like, the planet side stuff, if we remove the specificity of Tribbles from it and a Ferengi from that, there are some similar beats, it felt like.
I feel First Contact, there is much more of a doing a Starfleet.
Yes, definitely.
Because, like,
the Ferengi involved being, like, Dal's Yondu being kind of like, well, of course, dodgy cons. You know, tell them they're doing a Starfleet. There was still the aim and overall result.
Like,
okay.
I mean, this one doesn't, like, out of, as the, based on the Tribble stories, you know, I would say that this would be the weakest of the four Tribble stories.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have the comedy, which isn't a problem. And it's great to see the Tribbles used for more dramatic, like, oh my god, our heroes could die because of a giant goddamn Tribble.
I did have that moment seeing Zero get crushed. I was like, I didn't just fucking kill Zero with a Tribble, did they? Like, what? And yeah, they broke their leg. But still, yeah, it was interesting to see. And yeah, that would be so embarrassing. And you know people have died.
Yeah. Like, well, yeah. What's his name? The guy who plays Bob in Bob's Burgers.
Yeah.
In the Short Trek.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Yes. Okay, so if this is the worst of the three, that does move it quite... for four. That moves it quite low down. That puts it below Prodigy's Pilot and Encounter at Farpoint. It puts it to spot 118 out of currently 134 with the Tribble body horror. And I admit, I know it's low down on the list. A lot of the episode is a bit meh, but the body horror is very good fun. Like, that disturbed me.
The body horror and just, like, some of the very good comedy.
Yeah, David Gerrold did a very good job with that.
Yeah, okay, so at 119, we have Picard, Season 2, Episode 6, 2 of 1, Let's Do a Heist, and this is better.
Yeah.
Sorry, okay. Sorry, Heist, yeah.
Yeah, as much as I love a good heist and I like a fun musical bit. Yeah. So that's puts this in not quite record speed into 119. Wow. Okay.
No, it's no Wrath of Khan, but at the same time it's no Plato Stepchildren.
This is true, definitely. Yeah, and who knows, maybe one day we'll see Tribbles again. I assume the Starfleet Academy show will probably do it at some point.
I don't know, I'm still waiting for like the HBO miniseries, The Walking Tribble.
Oh god. Yeah, in a Tribble apocalypse. That'd be terrifying. The whole world would become furry. Like, not like furries, but, you know.
Yeah. Like, it wouldn't be like zombie Tribbles. It would be like more like one of those ecological apocalypse movies, which is like, we have something which is like stripping our planet dry.
Yeah.
Actually, that sounds kind of good. I want to see that now.
Yeah. Yeah. Make a note, Star Trek people, but definitely listen. Our third and final episode of the night is Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4, Episode 2. I forgot the title of this, and it's brilliant. It is. I have no bones. I have no bones, yet I must flee. It aired on the 7th of September 2023, written by Aaron Burdett, directed by Megan Lloyd. The UK number one hit was Olivia Rodrigo's Vampire, and the US's was Oliver Anthony Music with Richmond, North of Richmond. Yeah, Olivia Rodrigo, quite like.
Yeah.
She's all right. You know, it feels very much like some of her tracks feel like she's getting some nice interference-y, like, poppier version of your Riot Girl kind of music at times. A lot of the time she doesn't quite hit that, but yeah, overall she's pretty good. Oliver Anthony Music, on the other hand, I couldn't bring myself to watch it, so I watched Todd in the Shadows episode of his channel about this, and yeah, it's not good.
I listened to the song. I remember immediately, I clicked the link on the Todd in the Shadows review, and I immediately remembered that this song was a thing in 2023 and all the controversy, and oh my god, you just couldn't get away with it because you had Fox News and all the conservative think pieces like really bumping this up, and you had Oliver Anthony Music trying to go, oh no, I'm not with those weirdos. I'm my own kind of weirdo. I'm very clearly a libertarian. And it's just like, yeah, after what song was it last week where I just hated the experience of having to listen to fodder podcast?
Oh god, Mario's Let Me Love
there
You.
There we go. I think we found yet another song where I am angry at the show and angry at you for having to listen to this song. At the same time, I'm also angry at myself for going all the way back in episode like 1 or 2. I'm like, hey, we should also mention what songs were number one when this episode debuted, because we're clearly music people. This is not going to come back and bite us in the ass with Anthony Michael Hall, the Rich Men of Richmond.
Now, do not take the name of Anthony Michael Hall in vain.
Okay, fine. Judd Nelson's Rich Men of Richmond.
Much better.
Okay. Hang on. The Emilio Estevez, Rich Men of Richmond.
Oh, dear. Okay, so on that note, yeah, it's your turn to do the recap. So I have one thing to say to you.
What?
Moopsie.
Hey, kids, who's ready for more of Mariner's weird issues? Did you say you? Because guess what? We're getting some more. Despite being promoted last episode, Mariner hears Shax and Ransom while they're doing a workout. And Ransom mentions how Mariner is not going to be his problem for much longer. Mariner immediately jumps to the worst possible conclusion and assumes that after being promoted, Ransom's going to slap her right back down to Ensign. But she's not going to give him a chance to do that because she's going, you know, Ransom can't fire her because she quits. And so she's going to become as insubordinate as possible.
Great logic.
Great logic on the mission they are going to go on. Meanwhile, the crew, you know, the lower decks gang, apart from Rutherford, are all being moved to quarters because, like, they've been promoted, and so they don't have the bunks in the middle of the corridor anymore. Boimler, he gets a room right next to the warp nacelle. So there's red light just beaming in through the windows. So he moves to the room, to the quarters, which is between two holodecks. Where he gets to hear T'Ana and Jax kill Peter Pan and Captain Freeman sing a song. He tries sleeping in the Jeffries tubes, but eventually, after he decides to room with Rutherford, turns out that there's actually a window filter setting to make sure that the glow from the warp nacelles doesn't blind you. You think that would be a training video. Meanwhile, because there's several plots going on, so you get like the two side plots out of the way. Rutherford wants to get promoted, so he and Tendi can still hang out despite their difference in ranks. So what he tries to do is do some really impressive engineering stuff. But it turns out that Rutherford now has a sitcom arch nemesis, Remick, who every time he does some fantastic bit of engineering feat, Remick is right there and is beaten to the punch. Eventually, you know, Tendi like says to Rutherford, "Hey, even though we're a different rank, we're still gonna be friends and best buds because Tendi's the best." And Rutherford goes, "Man, I really wish I hadn't I had taken those promotions that I've been offered earlier for like all the times I've saved this ship." "What?" says Tendi. "But like, hey," and Tendi goes, "Hey, Billups, you know that time Rutherford saved the ship? Can he be promoted for that?" And Billups goes, "Okay," giving Rutherford the pips that he was about to give Remick to promote him on his first day. Now Rutherford and Oso Tendi have a sitcom arch nemesis in Remick. Meanwhile, in the A-plot,
just out of time. The A-plot doesn't exist. We're not doing it now. Ha. Not really. Like, I want to hear about the Moopsie.
The Moopsie. So,
far away.
Meanwhile, in the A-plot, Ransom, Mariner, and Ensign Gary. Ensign Gary. They're going on a mission to a menage. Turns out that Narge's Menagerie au Fun accidentally picked up a couple of humans. And they're here to grab the humans, bring them back. Mariner is in her sweats and workout gear. She is calling Ransom Jack, and she is being as insubordinate as possible. And Ransom's just like, "It's fine. Everything is fine," which just causes Mariner to act out. There are many wonderful creatures in the menagerie. There are some swamp gobblers, and there's also the Moopsie. The Moopsie is an adorable little ball of fat with four little stubby arms, a wiggly tail, a wiggly butt, and it just simply says Moopsie like a little adorable Pokemon. Oh, by the way, the Moopsie also fucking drinks your bones, and the Moopsie gets loose and immediately makes short work of the swamp gobblers by drinking their bones and then just slapping the skins around. Mariner, Ransom, Gary, and Narge escape and flee the Moopsie, which waddles after them. Ransom thinks Mariner let the Moopsie out because Mariner was kind of just like really hackling Narge about the whole menagerie thing. And Mariner's like, "No, you're going to fire me anyway." And Ransom's like, "No, I'm not going to fire you. I read your record. This happens every time. Every time you get promoted, you immediately are insubordinate and get slapped right back down to Ensign. I read your report." And she's like, "No, I don't act out." To which Ransom goes, you've been acting out all day, which makes Mariner go, oh, maybe I'm the bad guy in this situation, but I didn't let out the move. I don't know why I'm doing this shit. I think I just have some self-destructive issues, but I did not let out the moopsie. And Ransom believes her. They manage to escape the moopsie and hide in a darkened room. But the moopsie is like an alien. It has an instinctive knowledge of knowing where air ducts are. And Naj is the next one to die, because Naj is a plant-based life form which is hardened calcium. And oh shit, that dark room they were in is the controls for the entire station. And the moopsie is just kind of rolling around on the controls and making space biscuits. And the space station is hurtling towards the planet. Gary has now pissed himself about 3 or 4 times this episode. Poor Gary. They need to get into the control. They need to distract the moopsie. Both Ransom and Mariner, you know, start to disagree over who has to sacrifice themselves to save the day. And Ransom has an idea. He tells Mariner to punch his teeth out. And she knocks out all of his teeth with some well-aimed punches. Man, Ransom, you may want to check out your bone density, mate. That doesn't look healthy. And they use his teeth to lure the moopsie back into its kennel. And they're able to save the day and save the station. And it turns out that it was the two humans who were part of the menagerie who let the moopsie out, intending to kill Naj and take control of the menagerie and the menagerie's profits for themselves.
Ooh.
Turns out humans are the most dangerous game. And the moopsie, well, the moopsie did nothing wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a few of the exhibits and Naj are dead, but, yeah. You know. Aside from that, that's 4 minutes over.
Oh, well. Charlie.
Yeah.
Have you ever engaged in self-destructive behavior, despite the fact that you know you shouldn't?
I mean, I am a writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a writer just before November, where no matter what's happening, I'm going to be making some words.
This will be my first year not doing that, so I'll see how I cope. I relate to Mariner at times far too much.
I used to be a lot more like that in some workplaces that I liked and got invested enough to get very combative with people, especially superiors.
Yeah, I was very much like that at the Hilton.
Mm.
I have grown, especially since when I've been put into more like supervisory positions. But now in my current job, I swear, I'm not insubordinate, but I swear, I think I'm actually trying to find a line on how far is being sarcastic and British too far for the job, this job and the customers. I am trying to see where the line is.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, as long as it works for you. Like, I know the times that I have been combative, a lot of it has been a survival tactic of my own, and often if I feel like myself and my colleagues aren't being treated right, and I find myself in the weird position where for the last 4 years, the different roles that I've had, aside from incidents which required strike action, I've been treated like an adult. So it's kind of, this sort of thing has kind of gone away a bit.
Yeah.
But it's definitely that instinct and that level of, like, you know, lowest level to second lowest level kind of wobble that happens with that kind of a personality.
Yeah.
Like Mariner, it feels very much like a backslide for her, given everything that she's been through in the first 3 seasons. Unfortunately for her, and fortunately for us, it feels like an entirely consistent and expected backslide of of course she's gonna lash out like this, even with her previous revelations of, like, I want to do a Starfleet, I want to be good at this. She's going to try and defeat herself.
But that's kind of like, that's always the thing that we don't take into account, that just like self-improvement is not an A to B. It's not, it's like, it wobbles. Like, you know, there are times when I am good at going to the gym, and there are times when I just kind of look down at my gut and say, there are times when I'm good at going to the gym.
Oh dear.
Or just like, you know, like you said, you're a writer. It's just, you know, I should be making time for writing, but YouTube's right there.
Yep. Yeah, terrible. But yeah, also, one slight criticism, because I've really enjoyed this episode. Bones and teeth, not really the same thing.
No.
Now, again, this is another thing you can kind of no-prize and go, whatever's in Bones is also something that Moopsy likes. You know, maybe it's a little treat for Moopsy.
Yeah.
Slurp out the bones, but nibble down a tooth.
Yeah, like, because Moopsy is not drinking the bones. It's kind of just sort of like you said, give it a little nibble, give it a little lick. It's Aww. Like, you know, it's like a dog will eat dog food, but also a dog will enjoy a nice little, nice big bone.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That kind of thing. I did love how pathetic the Moopsy was in moving around, in rolling about. It was like the lowest level normal type Pokemon, you know. It was like it up there with Clefairy and Jigglypuff, but without any of the abilities. I guess maybe Slowpoke.
What about Magikarp? One which is useless until like level 20, and then it becomes fucking Gyarados.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. With this, it is that thing of it looks completely adorable, but also don't go near it, which always reminds me of my family's pet rabbit, Mrs. Rabbit, who was an ex-lab rabbit who was part hare. And my dad tried to be clever and tell the person that broke the rabbit and a bunch of other animals out of a lab. It's like, I can't get rid of this rabbit. And my dad's like, yeah, if you bring it round with food and a hutch in the next week, knowing we'd be away for a fortnight, the guy broke in to get rid of Mrs. Rabbit, named such because no one should be near Mrs. Rabbit. We did not want her for the long term. And she used to intimidate the dog. She used to cut any children that tried to pet her.
Oh my God.
She was very much for Moopsy. And my first, like, my experience with pet death was, like, proper experience of it was with her. We'd lost a dog earlier, but we'd had the dog for a fortnight, which was sad. But
yeah,
with Mrs. Rabbit, my mum was desperately trying to be like, we'll go through this journey, this process, like get through these emotions and all that. And I remember my brother and I looking at each other at the grave, which is in the garden of where I currently live, and just thinking the world's a safer place. And it's sometimes better. I still imagine there'll be this paw, this skeletal paw, up out from under the tree where she's buried.
Sounds like it was already dead and was then buried in the pet cemetery, like in the King novel, and it came back wrong.
Maybe that's what experiment was done on her. But it was that thing of, we can't just let her go, because she'll fell cars.
So
you know, she will kill, the killing spree that she'll do.
You basically had the bunny from Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, yeah, that's rabbit to me. That's the experience I had. What? Like, the few times we'd let her out in the house, she would bite through the phone line. And it's like, does she know? Does she know that we can't call for help now? We put bricks under the little bunny gulag that she had, this like chicken wire prison camp, and she would still get through them.
You have the most strangest relationship with animals. Like, there's the bunny gulag. There's the gulag archibunigo. And then you've got your fucking thing with owls.
Yeah. I mean, fuck all owls. But, this Moopsy did have that kind of, this is adorable, don't put your hands near it kind of fact.
I'll be honest. I realized this while watching this this morning. If this had been in an episode of Rick and Morty, I'll be just like, oh god, that is such a tired joke. This cute, adorable creature which actually kills. But, oh yeah. No, yeah, but here it's adorable. I'm a hypocrite. Sue me.
Yeah, yeah, I'm fine with that hypocrisy. I'm in that same point. They probably did do. Oh, look. Oh, this is adorable. Oh, no, it's dead. Yeah, we've all been there. We've all seen this kind of a story before.
We've all seen Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Okay, I don't think I've seen that film since I was 19, but we've all seen Monty Python. We're both nerds who grew up in the 90s. We have watched this film more times than we should have, probably.
Yeah, but at the same time, we've seen a number of Star Trek Star Trek shows, like episodes where there's a menagerie.
Yeah.
You know, we have seen literal shows called The Menagerie here. We saw one just in this episode. And this does fun things with it. I was kind of hoping the weird corkscrew tail dragons would be in here, but it was nice seeing the things they had, like the weird three snake kind of orb thing and all that. And
I think somewhere the tribble eating creature from More Tribbles, More Troubles is somewhere. Yeah.
And yeah, Moopsie feels like one of those things that was so quickly adorable and horrible that it's entered that kind of not quite meme level, but it's, you know, there will be plush Moopsies out there somewhere.
I am surprised there actually isn't an official plush Moopsie.
Yeah, yeah, there should be. Isn't already.
I remember when I watched this episode for the first time, like 15 minutes in, I had to stop and go, my wife's gonna fucking love this. my wife is going to fall in love with the Moopsie. Because I know how my wife works. Anywhere I look, there is at least five Pokemon plushies.
Yeah, and that has been one of the joys in the editing chat of numerous Pokemon things popping up. Okay, apparently there is an official Moopsie plush.
Okay, and you need to put that link in the chat right now.
I didn't realize that Emma hadn't, because she hadn't seen this episode, and yeah, we had this on, and she was like, there is something wrong with this, isn't there? It's like, yes. Yeah, in the best way.
Yeah, and then I suppose, should we talk about the side, the B and C plots?
I'm sure, they're okay. The one with, what is it? It was Livick that was the nemesis, played by Nolan North, who is most video game guy protagonists.
And he's also Superman and Superboy in the Young Justice cartoon.
Yeah, he's good fun. But yeah, he was entertaining as the nemesis. I can't remember if he appears any further.
He does appear in like the last episode of the season.
Oh, good. Oh, yes. Yeah. One thing I will say, is going back to that, the oppositional nature of Mariner with her and Ransom and all that, is I have definitely had a nemesis at work a few times. Have you had a nemesis?
This has come up on the show before.
Oh, good. Okay.
Honestly... I've had several other supervisors from either other Starbucks or at Starbucks where I've worked with who have like tried to become my rival. And the thing is, it's like, you know, I really want to say I don't want to say it's like shonen like battle manga logic where it's like we're rivals to the end. It's just like, okay, I don't care.
Yeah. It's supervisors like, I find a bit different, but, you know, around the same level as you, Nemesis. It's not always fun to have, but sometimes you need a nemesis.
These were supervisors on the same level as me when I was a supervisor.
I see.
They're kind of acting like Vegeta, and I'm just kind of like, man, fighting's fun.
So like Goku.
Pretty much.
Yeah, good.
But she's like, I am going to become like the superest duper to Saiyan, and Goku's like, that's cute. Go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe in you, and we'll fight. Fucking love Goku. Good. He's a good egg, despite some really shit decision making.
Yeah. And it's just like, every time this happened, I was just like, I don't care enough.
Fair.
Like, I just want to do the job and get paid. This is not my life.
I did love Rutherford's whole thing of, oh, I can ask for things that I've earned. Like, oh, I could get recognition for having done a good thing. I've definitely been there with my work, where that kind of thing of like, oh shit, I did do a good job.
Yeah.
Oh, and I'm having to say it in not a defensive fashion.
Yeah.
That's weird. Yeah. So while it felt like the least necessary story arc in this, at the same time it was fun.
Yeah. And I like the Boimler apartment, you know, quarter swap sub. I gotta say, I was surprised that they actually made like a kind of an emotional moment of the four leaving like the bunk corridor when like all the light they all leave and the lights go down, as if to go, we're never seeing this again.
Yeah, we're in a nice end of an era. And for a cartoon especially, it's quite nice that, yeah, there's actually some growth.
For an adult animated cartoon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, that was a fun story as well. Who the fuck makes the California class? Were they drunk? Because we've seen the corridor bunk rooms. We've got a bunk room between two holodecks. We've got the, like, yeah, all of that. It does seem like someone was having a weird mood when they decided to make this place.
Dan Harmon.
Oh, no. It's
a spaceship designed for maximum comedic hijinks. So, no, it's the guy who created the Big Bang Theory.
Fuck. Okay. Oh, dear. Right. Okay, before any Big Bang rants.
I have one last question before we put this on the list. So, what was the title of this episode again?
It was, I Have No Bones, Yet I Must Flee.
And is that a reference to something? Is that a shout-out to something?
Well, yeah, that's a reference to I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, which is a disturbing story.
And who wrote that disturbing story?
Now, I mostly know this because of the is it the Spoony Experiment did this as a video game, like back when he was covering like media and hadn't gone a bit weird.
I think
it was him doing the point and click adventure. And who would make a point and click adventure of this?
To be fair, given that we live in an era of weird indie horror games.
Yeah. I can see it now.
You can see it now, but like it's Hal Nelson whose connections with Star Trek run deep and occasionally run litigious.
Yeah, it was quite a story. The moment I'd finished watching the video of Noah Antweiler playing I Have No Mouth and I'm a Scream, I was like, this is a short story. Fuck yeah, I'm getting this. I must see what this is like. So yeah, it was suitably grim.
Yeah, it's disturbing. The game is also disturbing. Although I've got to say, Hal Nelson does a fantastic job playing the evil sentient supercomputer Am.
Of course,
only Hal Nelson could scream the name Ted with as much vitriol and bile as any person could.
See, that quote, that was one of the ones that I had at work at Lloyd's.
Oh, the hate. How much hate?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, because there was always a free format bit that you'd have at the end when it was your turn to do the group shout. and originally inspired by the late lamented Awesomed by Comics podcast, I kept finding the Wikipedia page for anything and using a banking term and just finding replacing like the aloe plant or Galactus or anything like that. And then at some points I started using BioShock. And at one point, yes, I used the monologue from I Have No Mouth and I'm a Scream.
Okay.
I think that's when I had a countdown to me leaving there.
Okay. For context, here is now a clip of the monologue in question.
Hate. Let me tell you how much I've come to hate you since I began to live. There are 387.44 million miles of printed circuits in wafer-thin layers that fill my complex. If the word hate was engraved on each nanoangstrom of those hundreds of millions of miles, it would not equal 1/1 billionth of the hate I feel for humans at this micro instant. For you, hate! Hate!
That was great stuff by Harlan Ellison. Now,
yeah.
Charlie.
Yes.
This is number one on the list, right? Better than Wrath of Khan.
I mean, it's good.
I mean, the Moopsie did nothing wrong.
That's questionable. Like, Nosh is no longer with us.
Nosh is no longer with us, and we're now down to Swamp Gobblers. But at the same time, the Moopsie is, as far as we know, just an animal. It has the animal-level intelligence.
Yeah.
If an animal gets loose and mauls someone, has the animal committed the crime, or is the animal just fulfilling its nature?
I know. And when Emma and I were watching this, that was entirely my defense. But, you know, the Moopsie doesn't know any better.
The Moopsie is just fulfilling its basic biological needs.
As far as we're aware, it just padding over controls and getting into vents is just it playing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So, and I'm looking at the list, and we've got, let's see, what do we have? We have the Infinite Vulcan at 45, which had some fun animals and some weird shit going on. There's Iborg at 38, where LaForge and Crusher get a new pet, but this time it's a Borg.
So was that? The Borg. Iborg, sorry.
Is it good enough to crack, like, top 40? Because there are some fun stories, but are they, like, aside from the Moopsie, is this deserving of going, like, up?
Okay, so top... I mean, let's have a look. I mean, if we're looking at the, you know, you're looking at Iborg on number 38. We've got Threshold on 39. And then we've got, like, you know, we've got, like, In the Flesh. We've got Drone.
Oh, yeah.
We have Crossover in 33 where Odo fucking explodes.
Yeah. And he's getting, like, your bones sucked dry by Moopsie better than Odo exploding. Like, those are two very visceral experiences.
I mean, Odo exploding is 3 seconds. It's a gif. We get to see the Moopsie loop a lot in this episode. And it is great.
It is. Okay, is this better than 32, which is Elementary Dear Data, where Data tries to take on Moriarty?
I am not sure. Like, Elementary Dear Data is again, it's fun. It's a good showcase for Pulaski, who we don't really haven't spoken about much on the show, and her conflict with Data.
I get the feeling this is probably going to be the best that Pulaski will see.
Yeah. But at the same time, Crossover has evil Mirror Kira.
Oh yeah.
And like
it's got evil Mirror Kira, it's got piratey Cisco, it's got Smiley.
Yeah, like it's I feel like if this goes either above or below Crossover, one is not better than the other. It's just that one has Odo fucking exploding, and the other one has the Moopsie.
God. Yeah, this is a difficult one. I think I'd probably be slightly more inclined to put Crossover higher. But, you know, we've not returned to that Mirror Universe and seen whether it gets done to death with the other episodes, which, you know, it might
always
do.
Always a possibility. You know, I am good with that.
Cool. So that puts this at the new 34, a strong showing for the Moopsie.
Man, number 34 is A Taste of Armageddon, which is one of my favorite TOS episodes. If only because the people on the planet walk around wearing the International Rescue outfit from Fun.
Oh my god, that fashion. One day we need to do like a stream or something ranking fashion, not of the crew.
No, but
of
just
any of the ships, but of the aliens, of the varied people that we see.
Man, you see, you know, now you've given me an idea, an evil idea.
Uh-oh. Are you going to dress with one of those kind of weird cone hats for Halloween, then?
No, I'm just going to slap some Doctor Who and Blake 7 costumes in there, because that shit gets wild.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good. So, that's us now with 136 items on our big list. And we're done with adorable, awful creatures. And Moopsie, who did very little wrong.
Now it's Casual Trek with 100% more Moopsie in the big list.
Yeah.
Unless they bring back the Moopsie in the last season.
Maybe. That'll be nice. I could see them doing it. God, they're probably going to bring back Peanut Hamper, aren't they?
Oh, God, yeah. I know, maybe if we're really, really lucky, Ryan North will write the Moopsie into the Lower Deck ongoing that starts in a couple of months.
True.
Imagine an Aliens-esque sequel, Moopsies.
Oh, God. Oh, horrific. Okay, while you imagine that, that's it for us. And next time, we are remembering the sadly recently passed Jerry Taylor, who wrote a ton of Star Trek episodes, books, the whole thing. We're going to have a look at some of her episodes from throughout the Star Trek oeuvre. And that should be a fun time. Meanwhile, if you can't get enough of us, you can find us on ko-fi.com/casualtrek. to bung us a bit of money and suggest an episode or a theme, and we will build a show all around an episode or theme. We can also be found on Blue Sky at casualtrek.bsky.social. And Miles, what about you? Where can you be found?
They can find me on the men's room floor.
Oh dear.
You can find...
It's been one of those times then.
I live in America a week before an election. During an election year. Yeah, you can...
Yeah.
My Blue Sky account is milesreedlibato.bsky.social, and you can find me at my blog at mareedlibato.wordpress.com.
Cool. Yeah, I can be found at Blue Sky as well with skyshark.bsky.social, Tumblr occasionally at Faked Tales, and fakedtales.com for my blog, show notes, and occasional bits about RPGs or 2000 ADs. And with that, live long and moopsie.
Live long and don't let it eat your bones.
Moopsie.
You have been listening to Casual Trek, a Nerd and High podcast, presented by Charlie Etheridge Nunn and Miles Reed Lobato. Music by Alfred Etheridge Nunn. Star Trek by Paramount. Not us. Not yet.